We're good to go.
Okay, Chairman, we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Great, thank you. Good morning. My name is Kenneth Thurman, and I'm the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission. And today I'll be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. I now call to order the November 17th, 2021 Commission meeting. And I remind everyone that this meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. Also, I remind everyone that this meeting is a live webcast and can be viewed at www.calspan.org. The archive video will also be available at the Calspan website. Before we get started with the reports today and agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And begin.
Pledge of
Allegiance
to the
to
flag.
The United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation. God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to ask Megan Russell to take the role and call for the commission.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, everybody. Let's get started. All right. Kenneth Ehrman, Chair, Oxnard, California.
Here.
Present. Catherine Pettibone of Sacramento, California, absent. Tom Peer of San Francisco, California.
Present.
Present. Catherine Hawkins of Truckee, California, absent. Rudy Murillo of Coronado, California, absent. Okay, thank you, Chair Ehrman.
Thank you, Megan. So now for introduction of commissioners, staff, and local dignitaries. We have State Parks and Department of Waterways staff. Do we have Director Quintero online?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Good afternoon, sir. Good morning, sir. I'd like to allow you some time to speak.
Okay, I'll make just a few comments. It's so good to see you all, and thank you for the work that you all do. And I'd also like to mention before my comments that it's a real pleasure to be in the new building. And just a few offices down from my office is Ramona's office. And so it's just really nice to be able to walk by and talk with her and get updates on what's going on with boating and waterways. And recently I had the opportunity to accompany Ramona and other key Department of Water Resources, Department of Boating and Waterways staff at the California Boating Safety Officers Association meeting in Tiburon. It was really great to meet our federal partners with the Coast Guard, as well as over 100 first responders at the local level and statewide, including police, sheriff, harbor patrol, city and county parks, and others. And I can tell you that I heard nothing but praise for Ramona and her staff and the work that you all do as boating and waterways commissioners. I continue to be impressed with the transformation efforts of the department and how Department of Boating and Waterways continues to benefit through the collaboration with experts outside of the division. So for example, there are now experts in areas of legal representation, legislative support, communications, interpretation, education, and grant management within the larger parks community that is now a part of the DBW support system. I'm regularly briefed on the structural deficit of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund by Ramona and the department's chief deputy director, who's with us today, Deputy Director Liz McGurk and Deputy Director Will Shasma are also committed to assisting DBW on this effort. In addition, the department is engaging with the boating community and the commission and listening to your concerns and recommendations for potential inclusion on a proposal that we hope to advance through the Governor's Budget Act. And here's some things that are really pretty impressive. The budget for the surrendered and abandoned vessel exchange program is about $2.75 million. Our current grant cycle, we have 27 agencies participating, and you have removed over 5,000 recreational vessels from waterways. And about 1,700 recreational vessels have been turned in to prevent being a nuisance in the waterways. So the state still needs to deal with the abandoned commercial vessels issue, and DBW is participating in the work group to assist State Lands Commission and other state and local agencies in their efforts to establish a program and potential funding sources. With the recent oil spill on the South Coast, I did get to spend time with Tom Cullen, who is the director of the state oil spill prevention and recovery group. And so we had a conversation about this and how we can cooperate together to advance the abandoned commercial vessels issue, which is really a big deal in California. Also, with the Recreational Boating Accident Reporting Program, in California, we have to perform these reports in order to receive federal funding from the Coast Guard. And DBW has introduced a new database platform, and this new system has been beneficial not only to the state, but is now allowing local agencies to enter their data online. So really the work, again, that DBW is doing is improving the efficiency of the source of information that has a direct impact on funding. The Aquatic Invasive Species Program, which is a really critical program, especially for recreational boaters, but also for habitat and for wildlife. Department of Boating and Waterways herbicide treatment season will end on November 30th. And the field operations for DBW has worked really hard. And of course, like so many of us who are working in the outdoors, we have some real challenges that we're looking at between climate change, drought conditions, staff retention that's been impacted certainly by the impacts of COVID, and also getting the right equipment to be able to do the job. And I just want all of you to know, and members of the public who are participating today, that we at State Parks and Recreation are absolutely committed to supporting the important and critical programs that the Department of Boating and Waterways manages, and provides to California's recreational boaters and waterways. So thank you so much for the work that you all do.
Great. Thank you, Director Quintero, for your formative comments and for your leadership of California State Parks. I'd also like to introduce Ramona Fernandez, who is Acting Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways, Catherine Tobias, who is Legal Counsel for the Department of Parks and Recreation, Gloria Sandoval, Deputy Director of Public Affairs, and my thing is frozen here. One second, please. And also I'd like to introduce Liz McGurk, who's the Deputy Director at Boating and Waterways as well. Thank you very much for your attending the meeting. Now I'll ask Megan to read the opening statements regarding public comments on agenda and non-agenda items and other pertinent information regarding Zoom.
Thank you, Chair Ehrman. Let's see here. Okay. So yes, I'm just going to provide some information how the public can participate for today's meeting. So if you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items or on an item not on the agenda, which will take place later this morning, you must use the Zoom webinar app or call in by phone. And if you're currently watching the webcast on calspan.org, but you want to make public comments, please register for the Zoom webinar to receive a unique ID and password or a phone number if you wish to call in. This information can be found on our notice, the agenda, or the commission's webpage on dbw.parks.ca.gov. To make public comments on agenda items, please virtually raise your hand at the beginning of the presentation to let us know that you wish to speak. So to do this, there is a raised hand button in the Zoom app, or if you're calling in by phone, you dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute your device. And when the public comment period starts, we're gonna go by who has registered beforehand for public comment and then who raises their hand first. So I will call each commenter by name and then our IT team will unmute your device. And for members of the public that call in, you will be identified by the last 3 digits of your phone number. So just a heads up on that. And we will not be showing a list of commenter names. However, I will announce them 3 at a time so you will know who is coming up next. And commenters in the queue can be ready to comment when it's your turn. And please note you will not appear by video when you make your comments. And I would like to remind everyone to please state your name for the record before you speak. It is especially important in this virtual setting because video options will not be available to everybody. And there is a 3-minute time limit for each commenter, and we will have a timer that you can refer to when you're making a comment. It'll also let you know 30 seconds are up. And I'd also like to give a friendly reminder to our commissioners and staff to please mute yourself when you're not speaking to avoid background noise. And when you do speak, please speak from a quiet location. Additionally, if you need to make adjustments or step away from your computer, please turn off your camera. And if you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3676 or email it@agpvideo.com. And commissioners and staff, you also have my contact information, so feel free to contact me. So that is it for today. Back to you.
Thank you, Megan. Next on the agenda will be the chairman's report, and I'll be brief. I just want to briefly talk about on December 10th and 11th, I had the pleasure of attending the Marine Recreation Association conference in La Jolla, California. And while we were there on the 11th, we held a public workshop to discuss some of the items we'll be discussing later in the commission meeting regarding setting up some working groups to deal with some of the issues we have within the boating community. And the second day, we attended some information sharing with, there were some ledge reports and some different items that are facing the boating industry. I should go back and say at the workshop, we had boating and waterway staff, we had commission members, and we also had representatives from various areas within the boating industry and stakeholders. And there was a lot of good dialogue that was shared, some good information that we'll bring back to the meeting and speak about later today. And I'll just pretty much leave it at that. It was a very productive and very informative meeting, and I was really pleased to be able to attend. So with that, our next agenda item will go to commission activities update, and we will obviously go to you, Tom, as our only commissioner.
Good morning, everyone. Of course, it's a pleasure and honor to be here. And to see all of you, if only virtually. I just have one item that I would like to just share with the commission. Some of you may or may not be familiar with the so-called floating community of Richardson Bay, which is off of Sausalito, north of San Francisco. And it's a community of approximately, I believe, about 150 live on board people who occupy vessels in various stages of repair or disrepair or what have you. And I'm sharing that now because the Los Angeles Times on November 9th wrote a fairly detailed article about the transitions that community is facing. And it's I think the reason I bring it to the commission's attention is it's almost a microcosm of what we do here on boating and waterways, but also having to do with the housing crisis in the state of California. So a lot of these people are obviously of lower income. I shouldn't say obviously, but many of them are of lower income. And this is one of their few affordable opportunities for housing. And that unfortunately butts up with basically the forces of gentrification, but also issues surrounding, Mr. Quintero brought up this issue of derelict vessels, and many of the vessels are in a very poor state of repair, which leads to a whole host of issues. And I have a vessel there in the marina in Sausalito, and I frequently go out my dinghy and sort of go through that community, and they have boats that are just constantly running bilge pumps just to keep them afloat, and this results, of course, in discharge of oils into the water. There's very few septic alternatives for the liveaboards. Apparently, the anchorage has sensitive environmental species such as eelgrass, which are being compromised by the boaters. And so it's, the news angle on this in the Los Angeles Times, and I commend you guys, it's November 9th, everyone read it, it's a very good article, is the city of Sausalito is attempting to basically remove the entire community by 2025 is their goal. And apparently they removed already, I believe, 120 derelict vessels that were anchored out there. But it's, again, it's a very interesting confluence of what we face, I think, on the commission, sort of needs of boaters and environmental issues and derelict vessels and species and so forth. And that sort of butts up against this major housing crisis we're having in the state. So that's really all I have, but I think it's a very interesting, from a personal note, it's a really historic community that goes back to the Bohemian days of the 60s in San Francisco, and it's sort of a relic of that that seems to be facing extinction. So I don't really have an opinion either way on it, but I did think I'd just bring that to the attention of the commissioners and others.
Thank you, Commissioner Pierre. We appreciate your time and your commitment to the Boating and Waterways Commission as well. Next on the agenda, announcing the public comment periods. Multiple public comment periods have been established throughout the meeting. They will occur after the following reports: Acting Deputy Director update, Communications and Marketing update, Local Assistance Sewage Management Grants, Local Assistance Boat Launching Facility Programs, Local Assistance Public Small Craft Harbor Loan Program, Private Small Craft Harbor Loan Program, and Shoreline Erosion and Restoration Programs. Also on the agenda, item 8 will be public comment period on non-agenda items. The comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items not on the agenda. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Members of the public are not required to provide their names. However, stating it would make it easier for the staff to contact members of the public for any follow-up if necessary. Individual speakers may not pool their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. And with that, we'll go to our next agenda item, the Deputy Director's Report. Acting Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez will present the division updates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good morning, everyone. It is good to see everyone virtually. So this morning, I do want to provide, I'm going to be brief, but I will provide some administrative updates. Next slide, please. So just a few updates on staffing. We do continue to recruit key positions within the division, primarily in our aquatic invasive species field operation, where there has been a lot of staffing retention and recruitment efforts. Also in our loans and grants unit, we're also have some key positions there that we're looking to backfill. Next slide, please. Oops, go back, I'm sorry. Second bullet. As Director Quintero mentioned, yes, we have moved into this beautiful resources agency building. The division is located on the 12th floor. Though we went through and identified staff that are office-based and also remotely based, there is still plenty of room in this building for those that are working remotely, that they can come into the office, reserve space. And also, as the director mentioned, it is really good personally for me to be able to walk the halls here on the 14th floor and be able to communicate directly with the director, with Liz, the chief deputy director, with the other deputy directors within the various divisions. So it's a beautiful building. We're glad we're here, and we're excited, hopefully in the future, to have in-person commission meetings here to share our space here. COVID-19, we continue to ensure the safety of our staff. So we continue to follow CDPH guidelines as it relates to the COVID-19 guidelines. Also, we have implemented weekly testing for our field operation, and soon we will be starting testing for the headquarters of people that are reporting in. And that is for staff that are either unvaccinated or undeclared. But one other item that I know that the commission had asked for was on our budget side. I know last commission meeting, I gave a report on the Harvest and Watercraft Revolving Fund, where we are today. We did kind of go over that during the workshop, was to provide a, what we call in the state world, a budget, Harvest and Watercraft Revolving Fund condition statement. We are currently still to ensure that we're providing the most accurate data and a snapshot of where we are today. I would like to let the commission know that we won't be providing that information today, but we'll be getting that out to you just as soon as possible. Next slide, please. One of the other things that I do want to mention is that our VESA registration. So in past years, you know, we have seen a decline in California of motorized VESA registrations. And I believe that at the end of July, DMV reported that there was approximately a little over 685,000 registered voters. At the end of September, I reported that it was at 695. And as of October 2021, we are now at, you know, as you can see on the screen, at, you know, over 698. So our numbers are going up, and that, you know, for all of us is pretty exciting. Next slide, please. As I previously reported out at the last commission meeting, that we were going to be separating the Quagga Zebra Mussel sticker process with vessel registration. And again, as I mentioned, it was in conflict with federal law. And so this year, in working closely with the DMV, we have separated out that process. We continue to work with DMV, obviously, with any new or change process within any organization, there's going to be some, you know, glitches or, you know, some growing pains during that time. So we did issue out or distributed out with VESA renewal the inserts. We continue to use our social media platforms, let, you know, the voters know of this change. We are working, again, closely with DMV on our websites to ensure consistency on processes there. So next slide, please. I believe I had already mentioned at our previous meeting that I would continue to update the commission on regulation processes. So we are in the very early stages of engaging with the boating industry to form a work group to help the division with establishing a new fee structure for the for-hire licensing and for the for-hire vessel operator program. Next slide. As the director mentioned, you know, this, I'm going to provide also a couple program updates and just to highlight some of the things that we've been doing over this last year. And so one of them has been, you know, the training program. The Marine Law Enforcement Training Program operates with a very minimal budget through our federal recreation funding through the Coast Guard. And even through the challenges of COVID over the last year, we have been successful in the statewide training. We continue to train well over 300 first responders, law enforcement officers. We have 25 classes. We cover eight separate disciplines within our program. We have added new instructors to our cadre. We've expanded on our Boating Under the Influence program from a 3-day to a 4-day to allow for additional practice in the for officers to in administering the sobriety, our standardized field sobriety test, and also to add a work, a report component to that curriculum. And our 2021 course catalog went out November 1. And already a large majority of our classes are already full. Again, we couldn't be successful in our programs without the many partners that help provide instructors and facilities. And so we are internally grateful for our internal partners within the department and as well as with our external. Also, as the director mentioned, the accident report program. Again, this was a fairly new change for us to go from a paper form to a online database. And again, there was lots of, over the last few years, there's been a lot of lessons learned in this. You know, we reached out again to the boating community. We were provided valuable input on the data, on what that database should look like. And so we, again, are grateful to the partners that participated in that, and that we now have an online system that law enforcement can report their accidents. We can get real-time data, we can run queries on this, so it has proven to be very effective for us. And lastly, I do want to talk about the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program, another that I think the director mentioned. And this particular program, on the norm, we tend to always, receive, it gets negative attention. So one of the things I'd like to do today is to kind of highlight the successes of this program. So the Aquatic Invasive Species Program has continued to focus on priority areas of concern and increasing recreational access successfully through the various areas, which include addressing the public complaints. We've been maintaining boating access, such as marinas. We've been working with the Delta stakeholders, local and state, and also utilizing the science and the latest advances in technology to improve our efficacy and understanding of the aquatic invasive plant growth and the distribution. This team has also continued successful collaboration with one of our sister agencies, the Department of Water Resources, to restore tidal wetland acres through a contract funded by the IBWR. We've also been successful in finalizing a Space Act agreement with NASA, and that's that work has begun to improve our monitoring of the invasive species utilizing multispectral satellite imagery. This is a technology that the Aquatic Invasive Species Program has not yet been able to utilize before, and would greatly increase the delta monitoring for issues. It can facilitate more effective treatments and provide data on the treatment efficacy. Some of the forecasts that we're looking for the 2022 treatment plan is to test out physical barriers to successfully increase the use of integrated pest management and adaptive management of the invasives. We also will continue to collaborate federal, state, and local agencies to better utilize our resources and to better control the invasives in the Delta. And next slide, please. I'd like to provide the commission with a legislative update, and I will be reading verbatim on this. This summary provides excerpts and status of the legislative affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is accurate as of November 2, 2021. Assembly Bill 8591, Vessel Arrests. Summary, this bill authorizes peace officers to use a fix-it ticket for the following vessel-related violations. 1, expired vessel registration. 2, failure to paint the vessel identification number on the forward half of the boat. 3, operating a vessel without possessing an operating license. 4, failure to display registration stickers on a vessel. 5, using a recreational boat without a proper flotation device. And 6, operating a boat without a proper service life extinguisher. And 7, having a fire extinguisher without the proper metallic nameplate. Status signed, Chapter 57 and Statutes of 2021. Assembly Bill 817, sport fishing license, 12 consecutive month licenses. Summary, this bill authorizes the Department of Fish and Wildlife, DFW, to issue fish, sport fish licensing valid for 12 consecutive months until January 1 of 2030, as specified. This bill also authorizes DFW to provide an electronic mobile device option to display fishing license by January 1, 2023. The bill requires DFW to report to the legislature on or before January 1 of 2025 on recommendations to increase fishing license fees to fully offset the program administrative costs. Additionally, the bill requires DFW to report to the legislature on or before January 1, 2028, evaluating all sport fishing licenses as specified. Status signed, Chapter 607 and Statutes of 2021. And this is, there's just information only for the commission. There's no action. And slide number 8. Commission Chair, this completes my report. Thank you.
And Megan, do we have anybody with public comment?
Did see some raised hands. Okay. All right. So I see a couple raised hands. I'm going to go ahead and call out your names. We have Jerry Desmond, who I am going to unmute. And Jerry should be on.
Hello, Megan. I am unmuted. Thank you. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC. And good morning. Just two issues I thought I'd highlight. One is the legislation that Acting Deputy Director Fernandez reported. RBOC supported both of those measures as reasonable and important issues for the, you know, California boaters. And then second, in advance of the discussion later in the agenda and the chairman's plan to establish working groups and assign members, wanted to bring attention hopefully to a letter that of 8 of the boating stakeholder organizations jointly signed and sent in to Ms. Fernandez on November 9th following the October public workshop that we all participated in. And, you know, the purpose of the letter, of course, is to reconfirm our strong support for a vital and engaged Division of Boating and Waterways that provides programs and services that benefit the boating community, of course. And we thought we should emphasize a few of the issues. One of which is the stakeholder process itself, which we are, you know, will engage in completely. And we had asked for that. And of course, we support it and other organizations do. We believe that in order to plan for the future of DBW and the boating experience, that more time should be necessary to ensure the stakeholder process addresses the future of DBW, not just existing programs and services. And really presents a good work product, and is also based upon, you know, the real how much money is there, you know, that boaters pay in fuel tax dollars go to other programs and services today, starting with that budget document that Ms. Fernandez mentioned. And then second, in terms of the issues, there are issues that we're hoping that are in the letter that will be addressed in the stakeholder process, like we mentioned informally in the working group meeting. And as we have all, you know, talked in the past, one of which is the, you know, the role of the Boating and Waterways Commission, the reasonable apportionment of funds, other beneficiaries paying for programs, perhaps having you know, a number of issues addressed as well. So just wanted to highlight that letter. Hopefully the commissioners have it as well as Director Fernandez. And we look forward to participating, you know, starting tomorrow, all of our groups. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Desmond.
And we had another comment, Mr. Chair, Mark Smith, who, Mark, you should be unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you for the opportunity to make public comment. Want to endorse and support, first, Mark Smith on behalf of the National Marine Manufacturers Association. Sorry about that. Want to endorse and support the comments made by my colleague, Jerry Desmond. We also are looking forward to participating in this workshop process. It's something that our groups have consistently asked for, and we are pleased to see the department and the division moving forward. I wanted to emphasize something that the acting deputy director brought up in her legislative report. AB 817, the 365-day fishing license, is something that has been a long time coming. As a matter of fact, I think it was a proposal that was previously brought up at least 7 or 8 consecutive times in the legislature. My client, the Coastal Conservation Association of California, was pleased to work with others to get that over the finish line this year. We see this as part of a longer-term effort to maintain enthusiasm among recreational angling community and to promote what is a valuable source of funding for the Department of Fish and Wildlife and an outdoor activity that record numbers of Californians have been participating in recently due to the COVID pandemic. We want to keep that momentum going. I think many of you may be aware, we sell 1 million fewer fishing licenses than we did in the mid-1980s. And that has resulted in a significant loss of revenue to the state. And it's an indication that the health of our fisheries and access do make a difference in terms of the number of folks that participate in angling. The conversation extends beyond just purchasing a license, though. I know later on today and during the workshops, we'll be talking about public access, which includes boat launch facilities and maintaining those facilities, making sure that we have enough of them, debris management, ramps, all that sort of thing, to get the recreational angling community on the water to access our coastline, our rivers, our lakes, and participate in recreational angling activities. Thank you again for letting me make these comments today. Again, we look forward to working through the workshop process. We know that it's going to be a difficult conversation, but we're looking forward to rolling up our sleeves and engaging. Thank you.
Mr. Smith. And did we have any other people requesting public comment?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to note that Megan did lose connection, so she's okay. Trying to log on. I don't know if we have other comments at this time.
Hi, I'm back on. I do not see any others. Jerry, Desmond, I still see your hand up. I'm going to unmute you if you... Jerry, did you have another comment?
No, thank you. I forgot to lower my hand. Sorry.
No worries. Just wanted to make sure. Chair Ehrman, I do not see any public comments at this time. I do see Tom's hand raised, though. Commissioner Peer.
Go ahead, Tom.
If I could just ask Megan or whomever to circulate the letter that Mr. Desmond referred to. I don't believe I've seen a copy of that.
Noted, Commissioner Peer. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'll just finish up. I just want to applaud the efforts. As a public safety officer, the division maintained its training efforts and even increased the quality of the training over these last few years when so many other entities have taken a different route because of either COVID or budgeting. A lot of other training has diminished. that the departments continue to maintain a high level of training and providing even additional. So I really appreciate that, because safety on the water is just so vital to the boating community, to be safe and to have law enforcement properly trained how to respond to accidents reported. So I would just say thank you so much for the efforts on that front. And thank you, Acting Deputy Director Ramona, for your report. Next on the agenda, communications and marketing update. California State Parks Deputy Director of Public Affairs, Goya Sandoval, and Marketing Coordinator, Shelley Gasecki, will provide a communications and marketing update.
Good morning, Chair Ehrman, Commissioner Peer, State Parks staff, and members of the public. My name is Gloria Sandoval. I'm the Deputy Director of Public Affairs for California State Parks, and I also lead the Communications and Marketing Division. Today, the Marketing Coordinator, Shelley Gasecki, and I will be sharing with you some key highlights on how we support the amazing work of department employees, partners, and volunteers. Even during the COVID-19 pandemic, wildfires, and the drought, these individuals continue to adapt, problem solve, and deliver critical services for the visiting public within the state park system and beyond. As California's outdoors continue to be essential landscapes for the mental health, mental, physical, and social well-being of Californians. Next slide, please. Today, I will first be sharing our department-wide efforts, including social media, incident response, such as COVID-19, wildfires, and the oil spill, the drought, new passes that are available to the public, and our popular, very popular, weekly digest. Shelley Gasecki from my team will be sharing with you how we support the Division of Boating and Waterways. Next slide, please. One of our major accomplishments is our growth in social media. It continues to grow, and here are some examples. November 2019 on Facebook, and this is the department-wide social media accounts. On Facebook, we had 165,000 fans. As of last week, we had 190,000 plus fans. Instagram has definitely been the place where we've grown a lot more. Last year, we had, actually November 2019, we had 39,300 followers. As of last week, we have 76,700 followers. And on Twitter, we had 2 years ago, 36,900 followers, and now we have 47,700 followers. Social media is a great way to connect directly with the public. We still continue distributing press releases, public notices, and so forth and so on, but definitely social media is a great way to connect directly with the public. And some of the things that we promote are grant opportunities, meetings such as this one. The graphic on the PowerPoint presentation is a save the date flyer that we shared with the public on today's meeting. So definitely a very valuable resource that we will continue to use and seek, you know, different new and innovative ways of engaging the public. Next slide, please. COVID-19 significantly changed our lives. Many public outdoor spaces were temporarily fully closed or closed to vehicular traffic. As agencies started to reopen these spaces, they did so when there were limited entertainment options for the public. As a result, there were many new people that explored the outdoors for the very first time. Whether new or an avid outdoor enthusiast, all were welcome, but it was very important for public agencies to implement COVID-19 guidelines to mitigate the further spread of the pandemic in the outdoors. State parks was not the exception, or even for recreational boaters. So we did implement guidelines in English and Spanish for the state park system. And the Division of Boating and Waterways, in collaboration with my team, also developed specific messaging for recreational boaters. Messages were shared via paid and organic social media efforts, posters in outdoor spaces, and on the department's website. These messages were also shared by many of our partners. So it was a really great example of how, if we all work together, we could really make an impact in public safety. We continue to educate the public on the importance of being COVID safe, leave no trace, and to play it safe, as these messages continue to be important today. And during the pandemic, we did see an incredible increase in boating activity. So we definitely, you know, saw the need to share these guidelines with the recreational community, because a lot of them went outdoors because it was an opportunity for them to be isolated from everybody else and still have fun with their family. Next slide, please. In addition to COVID, the state also dealt with a number of wildfires across the state. Some of these fires impacted the state park system either directly or indirectly, as air quality also became an issue at many parks. My team worked closely with the park districts to disseminate important information to the public. One of the best platforms that we use, again, is social media because we directly connect with the public. We either retweeted or reposted messages from the impacted park units or created original messages. This is just an example of how our communications office doesn't do all the work. We definitely do not do all the work. We support the amazing work from state park employees and its divisions to really, repost information such as the image on your left from Refugio State Beach, or create original content as the image on the right, which was a message for all those that were impacted by the Caldor fire, which occurred in the Tahoe Basin. Next slide, please. The latest incident that impacted outdoor recreation is the Southern California oil spill. Last month, the state responded to the oil spill in Orange County that also impacted San Diego beaches. The good news is that response teams across the state promptly mobilized all available resources to protect public health and the environment. Within our department, various staff, including DPW's Vivian Matuk, who is the manager for the Boating and Clean and Green program, participated in daily unified command briefings as some beaches were impacted by the oil as well as recreational vessels. DPW, through Vivian, shared key information with marinas and recreational boaters via email and website updates, such as the process to submit an oil spill claim for recreational vessels claim impacted by the incident. Vivian, she shared with me a couple of emails that came through from marinas and just boaters, just in general, that they were very happy with the information that she was providing to them. So I was really glad that we could all work together and share this important information. And state park staff, we continue to participate in the response effort. Right now, in a few minutes, there's another oil spill incident call. So definitely we continue to be part of the process. Next slide, please. One of the exciting new passes that the department has is a free pass for fourth graders and their family. Championed by the First Partner, whose California for All Kids initiatives support children's physical, mental, and social emotional well-being, the California State Park Adventure Pass program expands the opportunity for fourth graders and their families to enjoy the benefits of connecting with nature, with each other and their communities at selected state park units. To date, and actually I just got these numbers just a few minutes ago, we have close to 7,600 passes have been downloaded. So please help us share this great opportunity with your friends, with your families. Our goal is to reach all fourth graders across California. So the more we share this information with everybody, the more people and kids we get into exploring the outdoors. So definitely one of the greatest, one of the really good programs that the department has implemented. Next slide, please. And one of our most popular communication tools that we use continues to be the weekly digest. Every week, my team works with the department staff to share key accomplishments, projects, grant opportunities, news from the administration or agency, or simply postcards, which are pictures from across the state, from not only the state park system, but all of our divisions and volunteers. The digest is distributed every Friday to department staff, partners, legislators, and many others, and on social media on Saturday mornings. Definitely, like I said, one of our most popular communication platforms. So if you don't already receive it, connect with me directly or just visit our website at parks.ca.gov. On the newsroom page, just click on the subscribe link that you will see on the right hand of the page. Next slide, please. Lastly, I wanted to share with you how we specifically have supported the Division of Boating and Waterways in the last year. Definitely, like I said, COVID-19 messaging for recreational boaters, Also with the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program to make sure that people are aware of the program and when it's supposed to start. We help with 13 press releases. We also developed a new grants webpage. If you go to our main department account, you will see that one of the new icons or select buttons at the top has to do with grants. When you click on that, you find information not only for the Division of Boating and Waterways, but all of the grant programs available within our state park system. A lot of people do not understand or do not know that our services go beyond the 280 state parks. We provide, you know, a lot of money, to say it simply, to local entities to be able to provide amazing outdoor recreational opportunities across the state, whether it's through a new park, equipment for aquatic centers, life jackets, whatever that may be. All that information is on our website now. Also, we continue supporting boating and waterways with social media messaging, including the, like I said, the promotion of commission meetings, grant opportunities, or just simply just reminding people to wear a life jacket, which continues to be one of the key messages from boating and waterways to save lives. And marketing efforts. Shelly Kaziki from my team will be sharing with you how we have been helping boating and waterways with their marketing efforts. And I've been involved with that for many years. It is a privilege for me to continue supporting this amazing division and their staff as I've worked at the former Department of Boating and Waterways for many years as a boating education analyst and a public information officer. So definitely continue to love working with Ramona and her team. They're amazing. And if you have any questions, I'm available. But now I would like to introduce you to Shelly Kaziki. She coordinates the department's marketing efforts. Thank you. Next slide, please.
Okay, so today I'm gonna give an overview of our public awareness campaigns that we ran this past year. I will go over each of the campaign's goals, the target audience, the timing, and the media, as well as the results that we have to date. So the boating safety and environmental awareness campaigns are coordinated with the Parks Interpretation and Education Division and DBW. And I believe in the last commission meeting, you heard updates from my colleagues on the virtual outreach that they conducted in support of these media campaigns. Next slide. So first we have boating safety. This is an example of one of our ads. Next slide. So the goal of this campaign is to educate people about safe boating practices, primarily the importance of wearing a life jacket while out on the water. We target our messages mainly to power boaters, but also rotate in messages and creative that would speak to paddlers, such as kayakers, stand-up paddlers, as well as anglers or fishermen. And the campaign targets the top five highest boating accident target areas as reported in DBW's annual California Boating Safety Reports. And these areas include Los Angeles Riverside, Sacramento, San Diego, San Francisco, and Stockton Modesto. And we launched the campaign to coincide with the National Safe Boating Week, which was May 22nd through 28th, and the start of our boating season, and it ran through Labor Day. The media included early morning TV, digital, radio, highway billboards adjacent to waterways, transit shelters in San Diego, and year-round social media promoted posts. And we also hung posters at over 225 marinas. So for this campaign, we received 191.7 million impressions. Next slide. So this includes an example of one of the highway billboards. Next slide. And these are some examples of the marina posters. Next slide. We also have a boating app, which is in its fifth year. And it allows you to find a local marina, a life jacket loan station, and file a boat plan, among other features. And we updated each year and have seen a lot of really good usage. We're at 30,000 total downloads, which was a 20% increase from last year. And we also wanted to note that the top cities by users include Los Angeles, Roseville, Sacramento, and San Francisco. Next slide. And we also have a Facebook page, Instagram, and Twitter to support the campaign. With the advertising push, we saw an increase in our followers. We saw 197,000 Facebook followers, which was up 4,000 from last year. And we generally reach about 75,000 to 100,000 people per post, and we post several days a week. And these are two examples of our top performing posts on Facebook, one where we reach 300,000 people, reminding them to recycle their fishing line, and another where we had 15,000 likes on our environmental messaging. Next slide. So our next campaign is the California Voter Card. Next slide. And this card is required for registered voters. So this campaign targets operators of motorized boats or vessels. And currently those 40 years or younger are required to have the card, but starting in 2022, voters 45 years and younger will be required to carry the card. And the goal is to get people to take an improved safety course, go to the website, and then apply for their voter card. The media campaign runs year round and includes digital and social media and print ads in boating publications, as well as marina posters. And the campaign is still running right now, will be running through April of next year. But so far we received 17.3 million impressions. The next slide. This is an example of the voter card digital media. And we also have an example of the Google search ads that were new this year, and we found those to be performing very well. Next slide. So our next campaign is the Clean Vessel. Here's an example of one of the print ads. Next slide, please. So for this campaign, we educate voters about where they can find floating restrooms and the importance of keeping water clean. We also encourage them to download our Pump Out Nav app. And the campaign is primarily digital, with print ads and boating publications, as well as marina posters and floating restroom decals at marinas. It launched in September and it's still running right now, and I'll run through April. And so far we've received 12.7 million impressions. Next slide. And this is an example of the digital and print ads that we run for that campaign. Next slide. So as I said, with the Clean Vessel campaign, we try to secure more downloads of our Pump Out Nav app. This app has been around for 3 to 4 years and was launched through a partnership with the Bay Foundation. You can use it to find pump out stations, floating restrooms, and dump stations. And we've continued to see it grow in usage, and it has a little over 16,000 downloads, which is up 18% from last year. And we see that Los Angeles, Roseville, and San Francisco are where we're seeing like the most usage of the app. Next slide. So next is another one of our environmental campaigns, the Clean and Green Quiz. It focuses on environmental dumping, including sewage and oil, and through paid Facebook and Instagram ads, encourages people to complete a quiz so they can learn more about environmental practices in boating and receive a better kit of information. The campaign ran late July through early September, and we received 1.7 million impressions and had over 4,100 quiz responses. And next slide, this shows an example of what the quiz looked like to people in Facebook and Instagram. Next slide. So following our campaigns, we work with a research company to gauge how effective our messages were and measure if people saw our campaigns and how they influenced their behavior. So some of the questions included, do you recall hearing or seeing our ads about life jackets or voter cards? Did our ads influence you to wear your life jacket or to not dump your sewage? And on this slide, I just pulled a couple of highlights from our research report. And we saw that awareness seems to be steady with just a slight drop from last year. Excuse me. And then regarding the influence on behavior change, the response dropped off for all of our campaigns this year, about 10%. And in discussing this with the researcher and our ad agency, they were feeling that potentially the impact of COVID requirements over this past year or so, such as having to wear a mask, having to social distance, really impacted the behavior change, as people may have felt like more fatigued being told what to do or that they needed to follow rules. So they were less influenced by our ads to change their behavior. Next slide. So finally, our last campaign, we ran a paid social media campaign prior to and during the 4th of July holiday, targeting all of our park visitors. This tends to be a busy time at our parks and was the first major holiday since some of the COVID restrictions had started to relax. And so the goal of the campaign was to remind visitors to adhere to the mask requirements based on their vaccination status. And it also directed them to our updated COVID-19 visitor guidelines on the park's website. And so for this campaign, it received over 2 million impressions. And this concludes my presentation of the marketing updates. Before I turn the floor back over to Gloria, are there any questions on the campaigns or any comments? There's one.
I believe the director has a question.
I actually have a thanks so much for both of your reports, Gloria and Shelley. They're really good. And I don't know if you can see what I'm holding up in front of the camera.
Hey, you got the voting app.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, it's funny, you make me think about the programs. I mean, and I have seen the ads on TV and I've seen some of the billboards that you showed, and I just think they're critically important. And at state parks, we are also really interested in swift water safety. And we have been placing lifeguards along some of the swift water areas, and they've actually had an impact in life-saving, you know, activities. And the combination of messaging around all of the water safety is just really powerful. And it's, I'm really impressed with what the Department of Boating and Waterways is doing. And your messaging is just, to me, seems to be absolutely on point. And I'm going to just mention one thing that comes to mind. You know, years ago, Fish and Wildlife ended up inviting the environmental community to contribute to the protection and investment in wildlife areas by purchasing duck stamps. So there are a lot of folks who purchase duck stamps just for the conservation investment. And I wonder if it's worth bringing up a conversation. And I say that as an avid kayaker and paddleboarder, the idea of thinking about some sort of an effort to engage that community, which isn't listed as a required boater registration community, but that community is being able to contribute to helping to fund certainly our invasive species issues that we're dealing with waterways, because it's really aggressive. And we could use a lot more support there than we already have. And also, I do believe, as Commissioner Peer mentioned, you know, the issue of the impact of boats and certainly liveaboards and abandoned boats. I mean, that again, that's going to take not only political will, but funding. And I'm really interested in seeing how we can, what we can do to advance additional support there. And by the way, I live in San Rafael, and I often get in the water at Sausalito and also in San Rafael. So I'm very familiar with the story and the description that Commissioner Peer described, and have followed a number of the stories in that area and recognize that as just really insight into what's happening in other areas in California. And so it's you all have a big task, and I'm impressed with the work that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Quintero.
Sure.
I believe we had one more slide I was gonna send, or are there additional questions before I?
Yes.
Gloria.
So lastly, since I do have your attention, I wanted to take this opportunity to share the important message of Save Our Water. Even though it's not one of our marketing efforts, it is important for everybody across the state to save water. Despite the recent storms, California is still in a drought. So State Parks invites you to explore the saveourwater.com website to find out how you could save some water for tomorrow. And like I said, definitely everybody's actions will make a difference. This concludes the communications and marketing update. Thank you for your time and attention.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so we'll open up for public comments if we have anybody requesting.
Chair Ehrman, I do not see anyone raising their hand at this time. Just going to allow a few seconds if anyone wishes to comment.
I see the director raising his hand.
I have one more comment. with what Deputy Director Sandoval just mentioned, I don't know that a lot of people realize that we actually had to close several parks to camping because the wells went dry this year in state parks. The drought is something that is not only something that we see on the surface in terms of our reservoirs, but it is deep. And by deep, I mean that literally wells and parks are going dry as they are in the North Sacramento Valley and certainly the San Joaquin Valley. So it's something that's very serious and the impacts are actually invisible to many of us. And just wanted to raise that awareness. Thank you for mentioning that, Gloria.
So no comments, Megan, still?
No comments, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Peer, did you have any comments?
No, I did not.
I'll just close out by telling Ms. Sandoval, I love the weekly digest. I think it's really well done. I look forward to seeing every week. It really draws my attention, so I really applaud the effort. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
So at this time, we're going to take a 15-minute break and we'll reconvene at 10:23.
Chair Ehrman, it is 10:23 and we are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you. At this time, we will agenda item division program reports. And first up, Karen Beals, Chief of Grants and Loans.
Good morning, Chair Ehrman. Can you hear me?
I can.
Excellent. Good morning, Chair Ehrman, Commissioner Peer, Director Quintero, Chief Deputy Director McGurk, and Council Tobias. My name is Karen Dill. I'm Chief of Grants and Loans for the division, and today I'll be presenting updates on the sewage management grant program while staff who manages the program is at training. This program includes grants for flooding restrooms, pump out and dump station equipment, and education and outreach. These grants are funded through the Clean Vessel Act, also known as CVA. In 1992, Congress passed the Clean Vessel Act to help reduce sewage discharges from recreational vessels in the United States waterways. Funding for this program comes from the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund, and DBW serves as a state grant coordinator on behalf of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Next slide. California is one of the top boating states in the nation based on the number of registered vessels. And DBW works hard to provide services that our boaters need in order to recreate responsibly, such as providing floating restrooms. Approximately 266 floating restrooms have been deployed to 40 lakes and reservoirs throughout the state. It's estimated that 1 million gallons of sewage are prevented from entering our inland waters each year due to the availability of this equipment. Floating restroom grants are available to governmental entities that operate lakes and reservoirs. Applications for floating restroom grants are currently being accepted through our online grant application system, or OLGA for short, with a submission deadline of December 10 of this year. All of the new floating restrooms being deployed meet ADA accessibility standards. The ADA compliant floating restroom is shown here on this slide. Next slide. 7 floating restrooms will be deployed by the end of next year to the inland lakes or reservoirs identified on this slide. DBW was awarded $877,000 in federal funding to provide these floating restrooms. These federal funds require a 25% local match, which is met by the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, totaling $292,000, for a total cost of about $1.17 million to provide these VILA resources. Each grantee who receives a floating restroom is required to operate and maintain the floating restroom for 10 years. And this concludes my presentation for the floating restroom grants. Are there any questions before I move on to the pump out and dump station equipment grants? Okay, next slide.
Actually, I had a question. Sorry.
Oh, sure.
I apologize for coming a little late. How does a floating restroom work? Is it plumbed to the shore, or is it a pump out? Basically, a pump out model.
It is not a pump out. It has a holding tank that collects the sewage, and it uses water from the lake. So there's a flush toilet on board, and that collects people's waste, and then folks, the operator and maintainer, they either have a pump out boat that comes to collect the sewage waste, or they tow the floating restroom to shore and pump it out from a shoreside facility.
I see. And so this is exclusive. What I'm hearing is it's exclusively a lake and reservoir, and is there any prospective plans to place similar floating restrooms in, say, like the Delta or other areas that are more of in the navigable waterways? We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, there is no limitation from the federal government against putting it in a river. It's more difficult to secure, and agencies, we have not had any agency that has wanted to take on that responsibility for keeping them clean, operating, maintaining them. So historically, it has been lakes or reservoirs. They can be placed at a location that all of the boaters at that lake know where they are. We have the commitment of the water body manager for operating and maintaining it and keeping them clean.
So if you did receive a request from, let's just say, Walnut Grove, mm-hmm. That is something that could be entertained, even though that's not a lake or a reservoir.
It could. There are federal restrictions on how they need to be in the middle of the, away from shoreline so that they're not used by land-based users. They also cannot be attached to marinas or any kind of for-profit entity that would use it in lieu of a land-based restroom. Great. So there are specific federal restrictions that way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Next slide. The vessel pump out and dump station equipment grants, which is the next topic, are available to both public and private marinas that are open to the public and serve recreational boaters. Grants are available to purchase and install equipment or for a operation and maintenance or O&M. DBW accepts applications for pump out and dump stations and O&M grants on a continuous basis. These applications can be submitted through the online grant application system as well. This year, the program has $540,000 budgeted for equipment and $36,000 for O&M. These equipment grants help fund 75% of the construction, renovation, or operation and maintenance of pump out and dump stations that serve recreational vessels. Facilities may not charge more than $5 for use of a CVA-funded pump out or dump station, and facilities must also be open to the general public to serve recreational vessels. Grantees are required to operate and maintain pup outs for 7 years. Next slide. The list on this slide shows the current pump out project we have. This project will replace 5 pump outs in San Diego Bay. This concludes my presentation on the pump out and dump station equipment grants. Are there any questions before I move on to the education and outreach grants? Okay, next slide. The Sewage Management Education and Outreach Program educates California boaters about why it's so important to pump sewage and not dump it. DBW has 2 subgrantees that provide education and outreach regionally with CVA funding. The Santa Monica Bay Foundation is our Southern California grantee, and the San Francisco Estuary Partnership is our Northern California grantee. This program monitors approximately 155 pumpouts at 111 facilities 3 times per year. Grantees test pumpouts, replace small parts, inform marina managers of our grant programs, and keep us informed in what's happening in the field, and summarizes the results of their monitoring efforts. The document on the left is the formal summary of their 2020 monitoring effort. This document is available on DBW's website. This program also provides education and outreach through boat shows, dock walker programs, presentations at marinas, and informational publication videos. Due to COVID-19, many of these activities have transitioned to a virtual platform, which has improved and increased the program's reach. The grantees, along with our own Vivian Matuk, help also developed more low-budget but highly effective educational videos this year that can be found on our webpage and shown here to the right. Webpage, which is shown here to the right. Here is one video discussing how to replace and use a pump-out adapter kit. Travis, if you could play.
Pumping out your boat's holding tank is an important part of being a boat owner and helps keep the waterways clean for everyone. But boaters know how frustrating it can be to arrive to a pump out with a missing or damaged nozzle. Having one of these deck adapters on board can help with this problem and can make pumping out your vessel a simpler, cleaner, hands-free experience. By simply screwing the deck adapter into your boat's deck waste fitting, removing the nozzle from the quick connect joint on the pump out's hose, and then securely attaching it to the adapter. You can easily pump out and then stash the adapter away for when you're ready to use it the next time. Contact the San Francisco Estuary Partnership to receive one of these adapters for free and help us to keep the waters clean and green.
That was one of our grantees, and through this program, we fund those deck adapter kits. So please take advantage if you don't have one. Our grantees have also developed many other recreational boater resources, such as maps and boater guides shown on the left of this slide, many of which are in English and in Spanish. Vivian Matuk, the Boating Clean and Green Manager, helps us manage this education and outreach grant as well as capitalize on and participate in her clean and green efforts. The DBW Clean and Green webpage has many helpful tools and videos that have been developed for boaters under these grants as well. This year, we were able to complete and update the California Vest Waste Disposal Plan. The plan is being remediated right now for ADA compliance, but when it's complete, it will be posted on our website. This document identified California's current pump out and dump station resources and analyzed if our previous goals under the old plan from 2000 were satisfying the needs of California boaters. The report identified key regions and improvements to focus on in the coming years, such as identifying regions for the placement of new pump outs and dump stations. This document will be a valuable planning tool for the next 5 to 10 years. Next slide. The California Sewage Management Program is acclaimed for many reasons, one of which is the Pump Out Nav app that was developed by the San Francisco Estuary Partnership under this grant. And you've seen this app before in the comms presentation. This revolutionary app allows boaters in California to find operational pump outs, dump stations, and floating restrooms. It flags non-working units and provides access to an array of outreach and education materials. The app is available for download at Google Play and the App Store. It's also found in the Boat CA app under Clean and Green. The NAV app was launched in April of 2017, and to date, as you've heard, there have been approximately 16,000 downloads. This app is gaining popularity, and we're very excited that it is now being used in Oregon, Washington, Vermont, and Quebec. And we're working with our attorneys to make it available to the rest of Canada as well. Are there any questions on the education and outreach program? Okay. I'd like to conclude by saying DBW manages one of the largest CVA-funded sewage management programs nationally and provides many essential services to California boaters with CVA funding. Deborah Holmes is currently managing this program until we can fill a vacancy. Her contact information is on the next slide, if you could change. Thank you. And for anyone who would like to receive further information, please contact her about the CVA program. Thank you.
Karen, I'm sorry, I was actually trying to download that. So I typed in Clean and Green and I didn't find anything. So what is the name of the Pump Out app? Which type?
The Pump Out Nav app. So you would go to your app store or I can't remember the Google equivalent, but and type in Pump Out Nav.
Pump Out Nav. Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Okay, Megan, we'll open up for any public comments.
I see two hands raised, so I'm going to go ahead. We have Chris Miller. And Chris, you should be unmuted.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Chris Miller. I'm the Public Works Manager for the City of Newport Beach. And we are a recipient of many of the state's grants, including grants for public docks, for the vessel abatement funds, and this topic, which is the pump out grants. And I've worked very closely with Karen over the years and Vivian Matuk, and as well as with Deborah Holmes, who I have to say has done a fantastic job in managing our grant this past year. She's extremely attentive to details and she's very accommodating, which is very refreshing and a very pleasure to work with. But I wanted to chime in today because this topic is timely, because it was just on Monday that we received our $79,000 check, reimbursement check. Every 7 years, we apply for five new public pump outs at our public docks in Newport Harbor. And this is my third round of working with the state. And this program, I can't speak any higher about this program. All of our pump outs are well used, and we're extremely appreciative of the state's effort in with this program. Every 7 years, we come back, and because the pump outs get used so much, and they are free for all the boating public. And I take a lot of pride in maintaining them, and our staff does as well. And I believe our public is very happy with the program. So my public comment is just to say thank you, and I'm very appreciative of the commission and your support of this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
We do have a couple more comments. So first, I'm going to be calling on Winston Bumpus and then Eric. So Winston, I'm going to There you are. Winston, you should be unmuted.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
So just quick comments. I wanted to, again, echo the previous caller's comments. I've been using the Pump Out Nav. I travel from way down in the South Bay. I go all the way up to the Delta, and it's been extremely handy. It's a great app. The videos are also not only on the web, but there's a section in that app which has a bunch of helpful videos. And I was had the dubious honor of being one of the boats used to do some of those videos. So it's kind of famous that way. But I really recommend it to everybody I talk to. We try to promote it. I'm actually president of Recreational Boaters of California. Work with Jerry Desmond. Sorry I didn't mention that up front, but we try to promote this to everyone. I think it's everything of these programs is really important, and we appreciate the work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pompas.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we had another comment, but I'm seeing no other hands raised. I'm just gonna wait a few seconds. And just a reminder that it is, if you're dialing in by phone, it's *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute if you'd like to give a comment on this agenda item. But Mr. Chair, I am seeing no further comments at this time.
Did you have any additional comments, Commissioner Peer?
No, I did not.
Okay, thank you, Karen Deal, for your presentation.
Thank you,
and
Chair.
Next, we have Joe Dux with Local Assistance Boat Launch Facility Programs.
Good morning, Chair Ehrman, Commissioner Peer, Director Quintero, Director Sandoval, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, and Legal Counsel Tobias, and everyone in attendance. My name is Joe Dux, Project Manager with the Grants and Loans Unit, and I will be reporting updates on 4 grant programs. The first grant program is the Boat Launching Facility Grant Program that provides grants to local government agencies to develop or improve public boat launching facilities, primarily for motorized vessels. And I will be sharing some before and after pictures of projects DBW recently completed. Next slide. This is the Trinity Boat Launching Facility. The facility was deteriorated. The ramp's V-grooves were worn off and the entire ramp needed replacement. Next slide. The parking area's asphalt was cracked and the striping had faded. Next slide. DBW funded the US Forest Service $1.64 million that replaced the boat launch ramp. Next slide. The parking area, restroom, and project signage were also replaced. Next slide. At the city of Red Bluff, boating access was lost when a diversion dam was decommissioned. Next slide. The ramp was left unusable. Next slide. The asphalt parking lot contained many cracks and the striping had faded. The restroom was worn and not accessible to those with disabilities. Next slide. DPW funded the city of Red Bluff $1.69 million that replaced the parking area. Next slide. Constructed an access roadway to the water's edge. Next slide. And a 2-lane boat launch ramp with cable guided boarding floats and accessible parking near the top of the ramp. Next slide. At the Sailboat Cove boat launching facility, the boarding floats were dilapidated and the facility needed ADA improvements. Next slide. DBW funded the County of Los Angeles $400,000 that constructed ADA parking stalls. Next slide. Provided an accessible path of travel, new project signage. Next slide. And install new boarding floats. And next slide. At the city of Alameda, the Encino boat launch ramp was eroding and had many cracks. The boarding floats were severely worn. Next slide. The parking area was buckling from encroaching tree roots. And the restroom building near the boat ramp was, next slide, please. Sorry, my screen's a little slow. I'm waiting for catch up. And one more slide. There it is. The restroom building near the boat ramp was closed and only portable restrooms were built for boaters. Next slide. DPW funded the City of Alameda $1.4 million that replaced the two-lane boat ramp, including new boarding floats. Next slide. A boater restroom, fish cleaning station, and a non-motorized prepping area on the left of the picture. Next slide. And this is an aerial view of the facility. We also included new project signage. Next slide. Waiting for the, there it is. At the Thorin boat launching facility in Sonoma County, the concrete V-grooves of the boat ramp were worn to the point where they were causing tires to slip. The power guided boarding floats were also dilapidated. Next slide. The parking area contained many cracks and striping has faded. And next slide. When that is okay. The fish clean station was degraded. Next slide. So DPW funded the County of Sonoma $990,000 that replaced the boat launch ramp and power guided boarding floats. Next slide. We paved and restriped the parking area. Next slide. Constructed a boat washdown area. And next slide. And replaced the fish cleaning station. And next slide. This is the program's budget for the past 3 years. As you will see, the amount budgeted for this program's budget has dropped. This year's budget was based on the number of qualified applications received in recent years. We currently have approximately 25 boat launching facility projects in various stages of design and construction. The online application deadline for fiscal year 2022 and 23 funding cycle is February 1 of 2022. The last 2 years, we sent notifications to prior grant recipients, notifying them of their eligibility to participate in this grant program. Last year, 58 notification letters were sent to local government agencies, and this year, 45 letters were sent. DPW received 5 boat launching facility applications last year, which is a low turnout in the number of applications received. To inform potential applicants of the program and assist them with any questions about the grant program, DPW conducted a grant program overview webinar in 2019. In a virtual question and answer grant workshop in January of this year. The webinar and Q&A sessions are available on DPW's website. Next slide. And this is the list of projects that were completed in the past 3 years. Are there any questions before I move to the next program? Okay. Next slide. The Ramp Repair and Modification Grant Program provides grants to quickly restore safe and convenient public boating access to facilities that have been damaged by unforeseen circumstances or to extend boating access due to drought conditions. Next slide. Here are some before and after pictures of projects that were funded through this program. You have seen this picture before. The city of Red Bluff needed boating access to the Sacramento River. Due to the previous mentioned water diversion, boating access to the Sacramento River was lost at this ramp. This program was used to quickly provide access while the design and permitting of a permanent structure could be done. Next slide. DBU funded the city of Red Bluff $209,000 that constructed the concrete mat boat ramp at the Sacramento River's edge at the city of Red Bluff, restoring boating access to the area. With the new permanent ramp, this ramp will be transitioned to a non-motorized access point. Next slide. The Minersville boat launching facility gravel entrance roadway had a lot of potholes, which made it difficult to gain access to the facility with vehicles towing trailer vessels. Next slide. DPW funded the U.S. Forest Service $135,000 that paved the entrance roadway to the Minersville boat launching facility in Trinity Lake, restoring safe access. Next slide. At the Silver Lake boat launching facility, the boarding floats were destroyed in a weather event. Next slide. DPW funded the Inyo County $140,000 that installed a new low freeboard boarding float at the Silver Lake facility in Inyo County. Next slide. And this is the program's budget for the past 3 years. As with the boat launching facility grants, the amount budget for this program was reduced. We have not received any applications for this program in the last 3 years. We currently have one ramp repair modification grant project at the Trinity Lake. And the application deadline for fiscal year 2022 and 23 funding is February 1 of 2022. The online grant application is available for the upcoming grant cycle. And next slide. And this is a list of the ramp repair and modification projects completed in the past 3 years. Are there any questions before I move to the next program?
Yeah.
Next slide.
Oh, if I may.
Yes.
You mentioned you had no applicants for the repair and modification program. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So I'm curious, given drought conditions and so forth that are facing the state. I mean, does the department do outreach to various communities that we might anticipate are? In other words, my question relates to. That whether or not locals may have knowledge of this program.
Yes, we send out notification letters to previous grant applicants that in the past, and we actually have been in contact with one agency that has expressed interest in applying due to drought conditions, especially to extend the ramp. So we are.
So I'm hearing you've reached out to people who have applied in the past. Is there a larger outreach program?
Those are actually people who have received grants, and that those facilities may be, you know, up for a if there are past 20 years that they're up for a improvements and should be able to reapply.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yes. And if there are no more questions for this program, we'll move on to the next slide. The non-motorized boat launching facility grant provides grants to create or improve public non-motorized boating access. Next slide. Here are before and after pictures of the Waterford River Park project in the Tuolumne River that was funded through this program. Next slide. Prior to the improvements, people were accessing the water from the edge of the riverbank. Next slide. DPW funded the city of Waterford $520,000 to develop a new non-motorized boat launching facility. Next slide. With an expanded parking area. Next slide. and a new articulate concrete mat ramp to the water. And next slide. As with the other two programs, the budget was reduced in fiscal year 2021-22 budget to better align with the number of applications received in recent years. We currently have 8 non-motorized projects in various stages of design and construction. The online application deadline is for fiscal year 2022-23 is February 1 of 2022. And it is available for the upcoming grant cycle. Next slide. And this is a list of non-motorized projects completed in the past 3 years. And are there any questions before I move on to the next program? Okay, next slide, please. Okay, last is the sign grant program that provides grants to install or replace boating facility signs that were missing, damaged, or inaccurate. This program's budget is $10,000. Next slide. The picture features the worn out Eureka boat launching facility sign on the left and the new replacement sign on the right. And next slide. And that concludes my presentation. My contact information is on the slide. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
So Megan, let's go ahead and see, do we have any requesting public comment?
Yes, at this time I see one hand raised, and Jim Merritt, apologies if I mispronounced your last name. I'm going to, there you are, Jim, you should be on.
Thank you, commissioners. A quick question regarding the grant for the signs. Is that applicable for navigation and waterway signs within a harbor? Is that funding available for that type of use in terms of placing navigational signs within, for example, Huntington Harbor for boaters to use to navigate their way around the harbor itself? That's all I have. Thank you.
I believe so, but please email me and we could discuss that further in detail.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I am not seeing any further comments at this time. Yes, no other hands are raised.
Do you have any additional comments, Commissioner Pierre?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Joe Ducks, for your presentation.
Thank you.
And at this time, we'll hear from Department Staff Casey Codwell.
There we go. All right. Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Peer, Director Quintero, everyone joining us today. My name is Casey Caldwell. I am a project manager and program lead in DBW's Grants and Loans Unit. And today it's my honor to provide you a brief update on 4 more of DBW's loan and grant programs. And first, I'll discuss our loan program for public marinas. This program is formally named the Local Assistance Public Small Craft Harbor Loan Program. The program is authorized in statute, and through this program, DBW loans funds from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund to local government agencies for the construction of new small craft harbors and for the expansion or improvement of existing marina facilities. Project elements DBW typically funds through this program include boat berthing, breakwater construction, construction dredging, harbor master buildings, fuel docks, pump out facilities, restrooms, utilities, landscaping. Facilities that will be rented or leased to commercial or concession enterprises are not eligible to receive loan funds through this program. And both docks shown on this slide are at Santa Barbara Marina 1. DBW provided about $13 million in loan funds between 2008 and 2018 to the City of Santa Barbara
to replace 7 of the 8 docks at Marina One. And the picture on the right shows a new dock exemplifying the replacement work DBW helped fund. These loans to the city are currently in repayment. Slide, please. Looking at the program budget, in the state's fiscal year 2021-2022 budget, just current year budget, no new funding was authorized for loans from either this program or DBW's private loan program, which I'll discuss in a minute. We also did not receive any applications for loan funding in 21-22. The last loan DBW made from the public loan program was $5.5 million to the city of Berkeley for Berkeley Marina a couple of years ago in fiscal year 2021. Before that, the most recently approved public loan was $5.4 million to the city of Santa Barbara for Marina One back in fiscal year 2013-2014. The DBW has made numerous loans through this program in the past several decades, and past loans currently in repayment are generating principal and interest for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. As shown on the slide, in fiscal year 2020-2021, last year, $7.9 million in loan principal was repaid to the fund by loan borrowers. And that was about $3 million more than the year before. It's a big jump, and the increase is primarily due to one early final payoff. Borrowers also collectively paid about $4.3 million in interest to the revolving fund back in 2021. And as of last month, there were 49 loans to 20 borrowers currently in repayment under this program. And since the last time DBW updated you about this program last year, 4 loans have been fully repaid. Final repayments were made this year on loans to the cities of Avalon, Morro Bay, Oakland, and San Leandro. Slide, please. A brief program update for loan funding in fiscal year 2022-2023 or next year, DBW is not accepting applications for public loans. The program is currently suspended because of the structural deficit in the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund and the lack of recent applications. DBW is currently reevaluating the program in light of those factors. Mr. Chair, do you have any questions or comments about this program?
I do not. No, thank you.
All right, slide, please. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, should I be pausing for a comment, for public comment at that point?
Well, we'll take public comment at the conclusion of all reports.
Okay, very good. So next, I'll turn to DBW's loan program for private marinas, also authorized in statute. DBW administers the private small craft harbor loan program, which provides loans to private marina owners to develop or improve privately owned boating facilities that are open to the public. Project features that can be funded through this program are generally the same as those eligible under the public loan program, such as boat berthing, breakwater construction, utilities. The picture on the slide is of Breakwater Cove Marina in Monterey. DBW provided a $900,000 loan through our private loan program to Monterey Bay Boat Works in fiscal year 2004-2005 for reconstruction of the marina's floating dock system shown here. Repayment of that loan was recently completed. Slide, please. A program budget, as previously mentioned in the state's current year budget, no funding was authorized for new loans from either this program or the public loan program. And as with the public loan program, DBW has not received any recent applications for private loan funding. Also, as with the public loan program, private loans DBW has made in the past are continuing to generate principal and interest payments to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. As you can see on the slide, in fiscal year 2020-2021, about $162,000 in loan principal was repaid to the revolving fund by loan borrowers. And these borrowers also paid about $19,000 in interest to the fund. As you can see on the slide, these figures are pretty similar to the prior year. One loan has been fully repaid since our last program update in 2020, the aforementioned loan to Monterey Bay Boat Works. And there are still 5 loans currently in repayment by 4 borrowers under this program. Slide, please. Program update, as with the public loan program, DBW is not accepting loan applications for funding in the fiscal year 2022-2023 budget for the same reasons I just explained for the public loan program. The private loan program is also currently being reevaluated. Mr. Chair, do you have any questions or comments about this program?
I do not, thank you.
All right, slide, please. So DBW also administers 2 local assistance grant programs to address coastal erosion issues statewide. Under statute and executive order, since 1970, DBW has been the state entity with primary responsibility for shoreline maintenance and erosion control. DBW shoreline programs promote safe public access to the state's coastal waterways.
and to help mitigate the disruptive effects of shoreline development on natural coastal processes. I'll discuss the public beach restoration program first. As directed by statute, projects funded through this program must involve or be directly related to the cost-effective engineered placement of sand on beaches or in the nearshore environment. Based on DBW policy and other state guidance, DBW's primary objective in administering these programs is improving public safety at the shoreline and protecting critical public infrastructure such as buildings, roadways, and utilities from damages and risks associated with beach erosion. The picture on the slide shows an eroding coastal area in San Clemente in southern Orange County. A project that's currently in the planning phase is being funded through the Public Beach Restoration Program. There are heavily used railroad tracks behind the riprap you see in the background, and there is other public infrastructure nearby, including a marine safety station, as well as the only roadway that leads to San Clemente Pier. Next slide, please. Program budget and update. The state's current fiscal year budget, 2021-2022, did not contain any new funding for public beach restoration projects. There are currently 9 projects in progress under this program, most of which are multi-phase, long-term projects that are led and primarily funded by the Army Corps of Engineers. The next grant application deadline for this program is December 15th, 2021, so that's about a month from now. And this deadline is for funding in fiscal year 2023-2024. And the application deadline falls so far before the relevant budget year because each project funded through DBW's coastal programs must be approved individually, one by one, through the state's budget process. Unlike many other state grant programs, there is not a dedicated and preset amount of funds made available for this program from one year to the next. The application instructions for this year are now posted on DBW's website. All applications must be completed and submitted electronically. The application process is competitive, and all applications are evaluated by reviewers from outside the program. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll continue to the next program before I pause for comments.
Yes, please.
Slide, please. So now the fourth and final program that I'll present today. Since 1970, DBW has administered the state's Shoreline Erosion Control Program. The primary purposes of this program are to study problems of coastal erosion and to construct projects to stabilize beaches and shoreline areas. Stabilization of shores and beaches can be accomplished by implementing soft solutions like dune and beach restoration, or through strategically building hard structures like seawalls and groins and offshore breakwaters. And historically, this program has funded projects from both categories. The picture on the slide shows a recently completed construction project in the county of Santa Cruz, so the Shoreline Erosion Control Program helped fund. The structure you see here protects infrastructure behind the shoreline in a way that blends in nicely with natural surroundings. The structure includes built-in, gently sloping concrete ramps that provide safe shoreline access to the public. This was a locally led non-federal project, as many of our projects under both coastal programs have been over the years. For this one, DBW contributed $700,000 in grant funds to an overall $4 million multi-purpose project that today provides safe shoreline access and infrastructure protection just a few steps east of Santa Cruz Small Craft Harbor. Slide, please. Program budget and update. No new projects for this program were funded in the state's current year budget. One project funded through this program is currently in progress and is almost complete. The grant application deadline for fiscal year 2023-2024 funding is December 15th, 2021. That's an early deadline for a faraway sounding year for the same reasons I covered under the Public Beach Restoration Program. Applications must be submitted electronically. And Mr. Chair, do you have any questions or comments about this program?
I do not.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. This concludes my presentation.
Okay, Megan, let's go ahead and open up for any public comments.
Okay, let's see here. So far, I am seeing 5 hands raised. First, let's start with Jamie Timberlake, and then we have Chris Miller, Dan Gira, Amanda Lee, Jim Merritt, and Kim Garvey. And if I see more, I will call these names out. So first, Jamie Timberlake, and Jamie, you should be unmuted.
Hello. My name is Jamie Timberlake, and I'm the Coastal Zone Program Administrator for the City of Encinitas. Encinitas is requesting continued support for DBW's shoreline erosion and beach restoration programs, and respectfully requests that an alternate source of funding be directed to the program. Encinitas sustains over 6 miles of beach, many of which are narrow and bluff-backed. In 2020, the beaches saw over 3 million visitors, all of which visited the beach for free. Encinitas is unique in that many of the bluffs are natural, some of which even support native plants and fauna, but the natural condition also means that our slopes are very vulnerable. Encinitas utilizes beach nourishment as a main form of coastal protection, as well as other nature-based solutions like the creation of sand dunes. All of these types of sand acquisition projects are encouraged by the Coastal Commission and other agencies, which means they are implementable, but these projects cannot be accomplished without funding. The shoreline erosion and beach restoration programs are essential to our coastline and support our two main methods of erosion protection. The program funds the Encinitas Solana Beach Army Corps of Engineers Coastal Storm Damage Reduction Project and funds SANDAG's Regional Beach Sand Projects. Both of these sand nourishment projects are expensive as they involve tapping into the lost or stored sand offshore of Encinitas, but they are critical. Installing the Army Corps project would help our situation tremendously as it will bring us over 340,000 cubic yards of sand with replenishment every 5 years. This Army Corps project should begin in 2023. Encinitas and Solana Beach jointly applied for funding from the program to construct the project, but we were ultimately denied due to the instability of the funding source. The non-federal share for initial construction of the project is over $13 million, and the cities would draw over $11 million from the state through the DBW program if our application was successful. Without this program and its funding, the Army Corps project cannot be constructed, and the investment already made by the state, totaling over $2 million, would have been for nothing, having not afforded a single benefit to the coastal community of Encinitas. We are in desperate need of sand. In this past year, Encinitas experienced more than 12 major bluff failures, the latest of which occurred on November 5th, which brought down over 2,000 cubic yards of material, spanned 20 feet in width, 40 feet in height, and 8 feet in thickness. This failure was massive and terrifying, and it happened on a king tide day when wave run up on the bluffs occurred for over 7 consecutive hours in the area of the failure. Sand nourishment is our only implementable way to prevent the natural slopes from erosion and undercutting, and it is our only way of maintaining free recreational space and lateral access along the coast. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Next, Chris Miller. Chris, you should be unmuted.
Thank you. My name is Chris Miller. I'm the Public Works Manager for the City of Newport Beach. I'd like to voice my support in partnership with the City of Huntington Beach's previously submitted written comments as they relate to the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Project. This project is extremely important to the health of a majority of Orange County's beaches, and Newport Beach has been a direct recipient of the sand, and it is integrated into this littoral cell. Surfside Sunset Project has been around for decades, and it's currently in its 13th stage, which is long overdue. Planning for the 14th stage, even now before 13 has begun, is on our minds. We appreciate your current and past support for this important and beneficial project. Also, I wanted to highlight to the Commission that beach nourishment can occur in a few different ways and should not always be thought of as a one-size-fits-all approach. Common methods for beach nourishment include land-based nourishment or replenishment directly onto the sand, whether via new sources of sand or by relocating or shaping existing sand. Another method might be hydraulically based replenishment or pumping sand into the surf zone or just beyond into the surf zone or the nearshore zone. And a third methodology might be dredging of and reuse of clean, beach-compatible material placed in the nearshore zone via bottom dump disposal scows. This methodology of letting the waves sift and shift the sand onto the shoreline works well. and it has been proven to work well. Lastly, I'd like to add that my responsibilities and passion lie primarily within Newport Harbor, and I'd like to emphasize that beach nourishment isn't solely for California's ocean-facing beaches. Beach replenishment also includes the smaller in-harbor beaches, which, in our case, are prolific within Newport Harbor. There are dozens of them. For us, in-harbor public beaches range from the smaller 30-foot-wide street end, which is nestled between our city blocks. These are used for wading or hand-launching small vessels, to the entire perimeter of the iconic Balboa Island, which is used year-round by the public. These beaches are critical to the fabric of our in-harbor use and enjoyment, and in-harbor beaches should not be forgotten when speaking on the larger topic of beach nourishment within California. Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide comments.
Next, Dan Gira. Dan, you should be unmuted.
Is that good?
Yes.
Okay, hi. My name is Dan Giraud. I'm a program manager for Wood Environment Infrastructure, Inc. We're under contract to Santa Barbara County Parks Division, which manages Goleta Beach, the most heavily visited public park in Santa Barbara County, 1.5 million visitors a year, many of them from disadvantaged communities, provides the largest amount of free coastal access parking in the entire county. We've been working at Goleta Beach for the county for 10 years now. And the beach, like all beaches, fluctuates widely in width, depending on sediment supply and erosion. Starting in 2014, the beach began to suffer significant damage that was furthered by the 2015-2016 El Nino and the federal disaster storms of 2017, which resulted in very significant damage to the park and the complete erosion of the beach, which has recovered slightly since then, but not fully. The county previously applied for one grant from DPW, but there was no funding available. So as the speaker from Encinitas indicated, funding is just critical. Finding a secure long-term funding source for this program that isn't necessarily dependent upon boating revenues is pretty critical. And I think that Department of Boating and Waterways or Division of Boating and Waterways is only going to see that demand increase with sea level rise. I wanted to note that we've been working on adaptive management plans in various communities, and every adaptive management plan that I reviewed to address sea level rise all have beach nourishment in them. Many have living shorelines, the construction of cobble-filled dunes or vegetated dunes. All of these programs are extremely expensive. For example, the city of Carpinteria is currently planning a living shoreline and to protect both Carpinteria State Beach and the city. That project might cost $15 million. It's well beyond the capacity of the city of Carpinteria. Well, we have a local beach erosion authority called Beacon that is trying to marshal resources to deal with this. They too have funding difficulties. So I guess the one message the county would like me to convey to you, without a secure long-term funding source, we can't use our primary green adaptation method, which is beach nourishment and maybe living shoreline creation. As you know, the Coastal Commission and others are urging we move away from gray infrastructure like revetments, but that just simply isn't possible without a major infusion of funding into beach nourishment. So I guess the county would like you to consider, and we'll be at the hearing tomorrow as well, for you to consider finding through the legislature a regular, secure, long-term funding source so local governments can address state mandates to, you know, practice managed retreat and practice green shoreline management. And the primary tool, again, that I'm aware of is beach nourishment for these efforts. And I'd like to note also that it's pretty interesting. Sand retention has come back into favor with many people in these adaptive management plans. You're all aware that the groins have been reviewed unfavorably by the regulatory agencies, but every adaptive management plan we've looked at many, all have sand retention in them because we recognize that beach nourishment without retention is just an endless cycle that's extremely expensive. So I want to draw that to your attention. And finally, I just wanted to note that Casey Caldwell of your staff has been extremely responsive and helpful. We greatly appreciate that. We greatly appreciate you considering the county's input on the need for a regular long-term funding source so local jurisdictions can plan to manage their shorelines in an environmentally sensitive manner. Thank you.
Next, Amanda Lee. And Amanda, you should be on.
Okay, great. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Okay,
perfect. I'm Amanda Lee, a principal planner with the City of Del Mar, which is a small coastal city in the San Diego region. I'd like to express our support for the beach restoration and shoreline grant programs and the statewide need to reinstitute funding for these programs. Beach nourishment is an important climate adaptation strategy to maintain the public beaches and beach access along the California coastline. I echo the comments provided by Jamie Timberlake of Encinitas and Chris and Dan. The City of Del Mar has also studied adaptation, that's been since 2014, and determined that it's a vital strategy to the future of Del Mar. The state has invested millions of dollars to support studies and local coastal plans, which is all great, but the funding for critical actions to implement beach nourishment is what's missing. Funding for beach nourishment will help cities like Del Mar ensure that the public beach and beach access is maintained for the public use and enjoyment, among multiple other long-term adaptation-related benefits. I also want to echo your staff, particularly Casey Caldwell and Karen Dill, have been excellent resources. We're so appreciative of your agency's support. And as mentioned earlier, demand for these resources has increased exponentially during the pandemic, as we're seeing unprecedented visitor attendance increases at the beaches and shoreline. Our small city alone hosts over 3 million visitors each year. Thank you so much for your consideration and support for the future of these programs. We look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Okay. Next on our list, Jim Mirid. And Jim, you should be able to speak.
Yes, thank you, Megan, and thank you, commissioners. I am Jim Mirid with the City of Huntington Beach Public Works Department. I am the Environmental Services Manager for the City of Huntington Beach, and I would like to lend support to the beach and shoreline restoration projects and second Chris Miller's comments with the City of Newport, specifically related to the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Project. And I'd also like to draw attention to an obstacle in regards to the project that is becoming a major obstacle in terms of making this project come to fruition. Specifically, Public Code Sections 5003.2, 5006, and 5006.5, which preclude and do not allow the Department of Division of Boating Waterways to take on leases, even construction, temporary construction leases, which is required of most of these projects, especially the federally funded projects that require temporary construction leases. And this would include the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Project. The project has been earmarked, and we believe funding will become available in spring of 2022. With an expected commencement for the project in fall, around September of 2022. However, this is in jeopardy as the project partnership agreement remains unsigned in a draft form, as DBW, which used to act as a proponent for the project in the last few iterations, we are at stage 13 as this project has, it's started back in 62. Is no longer able to act as the lead or the project proponent and take on these construction leases. This would be embarrassing if the feds were to fund this project and we do not have an agreement in place in time to commence the project, and will jeopardize the project. The local stakeholders, including the City of Huntington Beach, City of Newport, Seal Beach, and the Surfside Stormwater Division are not in a position and do not have the resources to act as the lead or the project proponent. So I would strongly encourage for either a revision or some kind of waiver to these public code sections that would allow DBW to continue to act as a lead for the project as they had done in previous years. Thank you for your time.
Next, we have Kim Garvey. And Ken, you are unmuted.
Good morning. You can hear me, correct?
Correct.
Correct. My name is Kim Garvey. I am the president of the California Shore and Beach Preservation Association, aka CSBPA. We are an educational and professional organization with members from state, federal, and local governments, academia, industry, and nonprofit groups, all of us who value California's coastal resources. We share the mission of preserving, protecting, and enhancing our coasts and beaches through prudent management informed by the best available science. CSBPA was a primary author of the AB 64-1999 legislation, which led to the creation of the Public Beach Restoration Fund. In April of this year, we submitted letters to the governor's office and Assembly Budget Subcommittee to oppose the proposed stop of the harbors and watercraft revolving fund transfers to the Public Beach Restoration Fund. I'm here today to again ask you to not stop these fund transfers. I'm sure all of you know, but it's worth reiterating that our beaches are important for many reasons. They provide for low cost and accessible public recreation. They provide storm protection and coastal resiliency. They provide habitat for marine ecosystems, and they are a major economic driver. The projects needed to make California's coastal communities more resilient comes at a high cost. The scale of the problem is far too great for any one community to take on alone, especially from a financial perspective. To this end, the Beach Restoration Fund is a critical source of monies that local communities rely upon. Additionally, as you have heard from previous speakers, the Beach Restoration Funds have been a catalyst for federal funding to many projects across the California coast. We understand that the Legislative Analyst's Office does not consider the Public Beach Restoration Fund as a best fit for HWRF monies, as they contend there is not a strong nexus between who benefits from the program and who pays for it. However, we CSBPA do believe there is a nexus. For example, harbors interrupt sand transport to beaches and contribute to beach erosion. Placing dredge sands onto adjacent beaches contributes to cost-effective harbor maintenance projects. And beaches provide essential fish habitat for California fisheries, which in turn benefits fishermen that pay into the HRWF. In conclusion, CSB requests reinstituting HRWF transfers to provide much needed funding to the public beach restoration and shoreline erosion control grant programs. Thank you very much.
So at this time, I do not see any other hands raised. I'd just like to mention, if you did register for public comment, if you could still please raise your hand so we can, it's easier to find you in the list. And a reminder that if you're dialing in by phone, it is *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute. But Mr. Chair, I am seeing no further comments on this agenda item.
Okay, thank you, Megan. Do we have any additional commissioners' comments or questions?
Yes, I'd like to just make a comment. As a native of Newport Beach and a 5-year veteran of the lifeguarding, ocean lifeguarding department there, I can attest to a lot of what Mr. Miller said about the dynamic of not only the ocean facing beaches of Newport, but in particular, I would like to speak to the dynamics of the inner waterways. And Newport Harbor initially was, back in the day, whenever that would have been in the teens or 20s, was really just kind of a swamp, and it was dredged to create Balboa Island, where I've been a resident of off and on since I was born, and numerous other islands within the harbor. And over time, those beaches on all of those islands do erode, and they erode into the waterways of Newport Harbor. Basically, the sand is drawn down by gravity, and over time fills those various waterways. And so one of our speakers, Mrs. Garvey, was referring to the nexus between boating and waterways and these erosion control measures. And I think you would really see it nowhere clearer than in an environment like Newport Harbor, where that beach erosion immediately impacts. You have sandbars that are created that obstruct vessel traffic. And it's really just an ongoing process of trying to dredge and create, restore beaches, I should say, and to keep those waterways clear. So I understand that the finding difficulties the department has, but I did want to speak to my personal experience in Newport Harbor, both as a resident, a boater, and a lifeguard there. Thank you.
Excuse me. Okay, thank you, Casey Caldwell, for your presentation. And for our next agenda item, at this time, we'll hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. After hearing all the public comments, we will continue the meeting with agenda item 9, discussion and appointment of subcommittees.
The director has his hands raised.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You know, the last speaker on this last item was absolutely right in that we agree with what she said, but the funding in the Harbors and Watercraft program is being greatly reduced. We are looking to get additional funding support for beach restoration. I'd like to point out State Parks and Recreation manages 300 miles of California's coastline. So this issue is really important, and we recognize that for the entire coastline of California. A couple things that I'd like to mention is that State Parks just published a sea level rise adaptation plan, which talks about things like natural infrastructure restoration and approaches to how we manage the coast. But there are a number of contributing factors that are affecting sand deposition and longshore transport of sand. Climate change, extreme weather events, which are combined with things like the king tide impacts, which really generates a lot more energy along the coast. And of course, we get the seasonal movement of sand from winter to summer. We also have basically the interruption of sorts in terms of sand deposition from rivers, the impacts from coastal infrastructure projects, not just harbors. So there are multiple number of impacts that we believe really need to be considered in how we fund addressing this problem. And really the problem we face is that the Harbors and Watercraft Fund has been greatly impacted, and that is not our decision. So anyway, I just want the public to know that we are focused on this and we do want to affect a solution. And I'll stop there. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Quintero. So back to public comments, Megan. Anybody on record?
I'm seeing no one at this time. A reminder to those listening that this is public comment period for agendas, for items not on the agenda. I'm just going to give people just a few seconds. But Mr. Chair, Andrea Luker, apologies if I mispronounce your name. Go ahead. And Andrea, you should be on.
Excellent. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Andrea Luker. So great on the pronunciation, very close. I'm the president of the California Association of Harbor Masters and Port Captains, and we've been in existence for 73 years. I am also the soon to be retired harbor manager for Port San Luis Harbor District on the central coast of California. We are very pleased to provide our longstanding support of the Division of Boating and Waterways, as your organization has been very helpful to many of our harbors and ports. Referred to earlier today at the very beginning of the meeting was the November 9th, 2021 letter that was sent with our signature as well as seven other like organizations to Ms. Fernandez, which among other items outlined a significant stakeholder process. This stakeholder process is important to both the current issues with DBW And also looking forward in the future to programs, grants, and projects for DBW. We are very pleased, our association is very pleased to see forward movement with the items mentioned in that correspondence, and especially the workshop slated for tomorrow, focusing on subcommittees, work groups that will involve stakeholders. Several of our board members are participating tomorrow, and our association is looking forward to being a standard participant at your meetings, as we're very interested in future engagement in an effort to provide certainly the best options to our boating and marine public. In closing, know that many of our association members have been recipients of grants and loans for critical equipment and infrastructure from DBW, things they wouldn't have been able to do on their own, and we are most appreciative. We do want to ensure the funds derived from the boating community, though, are reasonably benefiting boating programs and services. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I hope you have a good rest of your meeting, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow at the workshop.
Thank you.
I see another hand raised, Winston Bumpus. And Winston, you are unmuted.
Thank you very much. And I just want to echo the previous comments. I'm Winston Bumpus, president of Recreation of Boaters of California. We are working with our partners, appreciate the stakeholders process. I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the kickoff meeting down in San Diego. I thought that was very productive. Since that meeting, we have reached out to our directors within Recreation of Boaters of California. There are 18 directors, nine in the north and nine in the south. We believe many of those will be participating tomorrow. We've already discussed which committees. There's been a lot of discussion here. And we, too, look forward to supporting ways to make the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund sustainable going forward. And we really appreciate this opportunity to work together to come to a not only a solution for today, but a solution ongoing. So thank you all for your hard work, and we look forward to the workshop tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I am seeing no other hands raised at this time.
Okay, so at this time, I'm formally closing the public comments portion on the agenda, and we'll move on to agenda item 9. So at this time, we're going to discuss the appointment of committees, either standing or ad hoc, potential subjects for the committees, and I'll bring some to light, and it's not limited to that. We can get feedback as well, but tentatively, the ones we identified from the workshop in San Diego, we looked at revenue generating opportunities, alternative funding sources, and program development. And so with that, I don't know, I've received some correspondence with people who are willing to volunteer. And I think it's very robust. I wasn't sure what the interest would be, but there's been a tremendous amount of interest in participating on these committees, which is fantastic. And so I guess we would seek out if there's any other topics that don't fall within there or anything that wanted to be mentioned. I'm not sure what the format for mentioning those, if we want to have them raise their hand or.
Sure, you can have them, this is Catherine Tobias, you can have them raise their hands, or that'd probably be the easiest way to do it.
So I would guess I would solicit any input as to additional topics or committee themes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I see one hand raised right now, Winston Bumpus. Winston, you should be on.
I just want to let you know that we've looked at it, the layout, and we can see all of the issues being handled in one of the three proposed areas. They're broad enough. So I don't think we're asking for any additional in all the discussions we had, just FYI.
And that's from RBOC, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any additional input?
am not seeing anyone else right now.
And I would ask, how about Commissioner Peer? Do you have any input or on topics or any questions?
I really don't at this point.
Okay. Again, these topic areas are they're pretty broad. I think we can there's been some suggestions under different terms, but they essentially fit in the three topics we have here. These tended to be the primary focus of the questions that were brought up at the workshop. I'm actually getting feedback on my own. Okay, so that's what I'm proposing. There's something wrong with my Zoom feed. When I speak, I'm hearing two or three people speaking. Is that better? Okay.
Yes.
So I think at this point I would ask, is there any input from Boating and Waterways on any thoughts or any additional topics?
Mr. Chair, this is Ramona. No, I think those, again, agree that those topics are pretty broad enough that we can filter in, you know, some of the other subcategories into those.
And so do we need to, I don't know, do I need to set the terms today, or is it something where we determine tomorrow the length and the...
Mr. Chair, what I would suggest, and I'm also going to look at Chief Counsel, but what I would suggest that you establish your committee for the work. Oops, there's some echoing. I think it's yours, Pat. To establish your subcommittee first and determine which one of your commissioners would like to lead that. And then from there, work can continue at the workshop on expertise within the division and also with the boating community.
So what I'm proposing is the three mentioned topics. I believe a committee on revenue generating operating opportunities, a separate committee on alternative funding sources, and a third committee on program development. And with that, what I would propose myself, based on my training and experience, I would like to be involved in the revenue generating opportunities as it lends itself to the registration and the nexus to DMV. So I would propose to be a part of that. And I would request, if possible, assistance from at least one staff member. And then tomorrow we'll seek volunteer from the various names we've received from our stakeholders. I've also spoken to Vice Chair Hawkins, and she would like to be involved in funding sources. And we'll again seek out the names of the volunteers we received and possibly identify a staff to assist with that from the department. And third, we have program development. And right now I don't have a commissioner, where we don't have all of them on, we only have one. But Commissioner Murillo will also be in attendance at the workshop tomorrow. And or if Commissioner Peer wants to be involved in that one, we can move in that direction as well.
I would be interested in moving into program development, yes.
Okay. So I think with that, we...
Can I just say, Mr. Chair, that I believe these are standing committees. Is that correct, Ramona? So when you have a standing committee, I just want to make sure everybody understands this. A standing committee is subject to Bagley-Keene, and it will require notice meetings, workshops, or whatever, an ad hoc committee is two committee members and does not require notice meetings. So I just wanted to note that differential. I think these are very appropriate for standing committees.
Yes, and I'm getting really bad feedback when I'm trying to be on Zoom now for some strange reason. That's what I would recommend to standing committees. And what I was looking at as well is is proposing that these committees run from formation tomorrow until December of 2022. That's permissible, correct?
Correct.
So, I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm not getting very good connection all of a sudden now. Okay. So do we need to do any additional? We can move forward with reconvening tomorrow to formalize these committees. Okay, and that doesn't, no motion is required, correct?
No, the chair has the prerogative on that.
So that's what I will recommend that we have the framework for the three committees. We have commissioner volunteers for each one of them. And then tomorrow we'll formalize the volunteers. And then we will set to move forward on our committees during the working group tomorrow.
That sounds good, Mr. Chair. The division does look forward to participation in this effort, as well as working closely, working with the voting community as well. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will move to agenda item 10. We'll suggested agenda items for our next meeting. Anything, Commissioner Peer?
Not at this time, thank you.
I would, if it's an appropriate suggestion, it's possibly just to provide an update on the status of the working groups or the standing committees at that point.
Catherine, would that be standard moving forward?
Would what be standard?
Update.
Yeah, sure.
That's all I have for agenda items.
Well, I'm not seeing an agenda item for generalized discussion. I guess my question simply is I don't know what the governor's mandates are now for moving us out of Hollywood Square land and into back into in-person meetings. Does anyone have a sense of where we're heading in that sense?
I believe that's been extended to March 31st. So if your first meeting is before that date and it's not extended, then it would be on Zoom. If it's after and I don't remember the date, Ramona or Megan, then not.
Very good.
And I would ask Ramona, don't they traditionally meet in February?
Yes, our next commission meeting is in February. February, Megan, what are the dates? 9, 10?
9 and 10, yes. Wednesday and Thursday. Yes, 9 and 10.
So minus the change, it'll be the same format as we're meeting today, correct?
Well.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to, I just received an email and I was just wondering if we could just clarify for those listening right now, who can all participate in tomorrow's, who exactly can serve or volunteer on these committees? Is it, can anyone from the public? Question more.
Well, I think we generally have not had, public than we do commissioners on it. So I think, you know, a commissioner, if there's one commissioner, maybe two from the public. I think the more to the point is that when we establish these standing committees, then they have a public meeting and the public is invited to that. So it's held many times more in a
workshop type of way. So I'm not sure it's so important who sits on the committee as that the committee meets and has the kind of dialogue that I think people are wanting, to make recommendations to the commission. Hope that answers that question.
Got it. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the last thing you said, Megan.
Oh, I was just confirming that I got it.
Okay. Any other agenda items for the next meeting? Then I move on and ask if we have a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
I second. And the meeting is now adjourned.
Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow. So Megan, I'm just